Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Tyler.
And this is the Capcom Show. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Tyler.
And this is the Capcom Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the episode for October. Today, we will be discussing free market-based economies, the ideas behind it, how they can exist both in a communal gift economy and a one based on capital resources. They're not exactly...
They're not mutually exclusive.
They're not mutually exclusive. You can have a free market based. For instance, anyone, especially with my brand of socialism, syndicalism to be exact, you could have a union or a group of people start up their own business and have it led by the workers because those people will be the only employees.
Yes.
And there is, speaking of free markets, there is, for those of you who haven't been following us, and for those of you who may have forgot because we've had a really shitty posting schedule as of late, there is a page on Facebook that we are partnered with called the Anarcho Synergy.
Anarcho Synergy Ball.
Yes. And one of the, I guess you could say founders. Would you consider yourself a founder?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm assuming, right?
Oh yeah, I would consider you guys helped out a lot.
Well, yeah. No, like, things out. You're one of the founders of said ideology, right?
Well, I mean, I was the one who basically fathered it, and you know, and Anna helped out a lot too.
I mean, he's just joking himself off, but then again, real too. So. Matt Perez joining us.
You want to tell us the story of how that you sort of came up with this?
What was it exactly? So. A while back, it's kind of a little complicated, but it's a little bit of a long story. So around like last year, you know, when the whole Area 51 thing happened.
Let's raid or storm Area 51.
Gotta see them fucking aliens. Gotta smack some cheeks.
Okay, just so we could give like a rough estimate of when this happened. I was getting really into I was like a very hard right ANCAP at the time. And what happened was I got really into like esoteric Christianity, and I just realized it just shifted my economics towards a lot more towards like center right than far right, because I kind of realized that like that you can't be basically borderline social Darwinistic with your economy,
right?
Yeah, and so I mean I still. In a way, considered myself an ANCAP, but like not in a traditional sense at all of how it's interpreted. But that being said, though, I started seeing these certain patterns between left and right wing economics, and I noticed that there was just like almost like this lack of integration of like the masculine and feminine into both of them, and that they could actually be very complementary towards each other, basically very complementary each other. One of the things that helped with this is that there was this book called Think and Grow Rich, and what it was talking about was there was a certain part was talking about was when you raise your child, you don't want your basically spoil them rotten,
right?
So and basically what happens is that you know they have like no work ethic at all.
Yeah.
Nor do you want to basically like have them like start from rock bottom, because it's gonna be extremely difficult to get them to
essentially pull yourself up from the bootstraps.
Yeah, because you don't want to throw them down too low where they can't pull themselves out.
But you don't want to. You don't want to foster them.
Provide them a foundation.
Yeah.
Provide them a foundation. So it's basically what I see it as is that if somebody doesn't have the bootstraps to pull themselves by, give them the bootstraps to do so, and encourage them to do it.
Yeah,
right.
Basically, yeah, it's just like that, but like in an economic sense. And so, with that though, it's just like, okay, well, if it is, we have these all have these certain commonalities of needs, all right? Let's try to, like, it doesn't matter which economic system you're in, whether you're in a market-based or a gift-based economy. Let's try to really focus our, you know, energy and making sure all that stuff's taken care of first. And we'll build off on top of that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you have to start with all your needs first before you can work towards anything else.
Yeah, and with that, though, like for example, like if more poverty-stricken areas have higher crime rates, it's like, granted, this is I'm not going to go like a little bit too in depth to it, but basically, like if people have less shit, basically, to survive, they're more prone to commit acts of violence to survive.
Yes.
So yes. The poverty scheme.
Yeah. So why don't we, you know, just give them shit so they can survive and not have to worry about any necessary violence?
Yeah, that's essentially that's the idea of redistribution of wealth, right?
Basically.
Yeah, but more in a libertarian sense, just doing it voluntarily, not relying on the state. Because I would rather, like, for example, the water bottle in the desert situation. I mean, it doesn't have to come down to the person stealing the water bottle from you just for them to survive. You can just give it to them out of your goodness of your heart, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And it's kind of like the shopping cart, too.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just, the dreaded shopping cart.
Yeah, actually,
I think that's one's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah,
because they got cart pushers there for a reason.
Well, actually,
I
don't know if there's an Aldi where you're at, but for anyone who doesn't know how Aldi works, Aldi, in order to use one of their carts, you have to stick a quarter in the cart in order to detach it from the whole row. And then when you do your shopping, and then once you're done getting your groceries and everything, you load them up in your car. When you take the shopping cart back and attach it back to the rail or whatever, it pushes your quarter back out.
So
that sounds great.
Exactly. So it monetarily incentivizes you.
Exactly. That's what we. Sorry. I bumped.
I'm going to move that. I am going to move that to a different place because I do not want beer all over my keyboard.
Sorry.
Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, we need a system like that where it monetarily incentivizes people in some capacity to either.
Is that the fucking police outside my window right now?
Yeah.
One second.
To take. Take care and do.
Fucking goddamn swine, motherfucking come by my window while I'm recording. Alright, that's probably gonna be edited out.
Roast some pig on the podcast, bro.
Anyway, yeah, it's a monetary way of incentivizing people to do commonly good, beneficial actions that don't really harm them in any way. In this case, like, they can leave their card out, but someone else gets, like, a free quarter, then. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm 100% down with that. That kind of basically takes care of, like, the whole fucking, the broken window fallacy of, whatchamacallit? purposely leaving your shopping cart out.
Yeah, to
make sure that people have jobs.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, like, in certain cases, this is an easy way to eliminate jobs that are unnecessary and unproductive,
right.
Really.
And a lot of the time, one of the things that I hate as a leftist is you get people where it's like, I don't want to do that job. But someone's got to do it. And it's like, do you honestly think that anyone wants to do that job? Let me tell you something. When I was working utility, a cart pusher for Meyer up here.
I used to do the same thing.
I vividly remember, and this is one of the only things that I remember from that job, was, and I'm impressed by this. I'm impressed and disgusted. I had to fucking scrape off shit underneath the toilet seat. Underneath, like someone purposely shat underneath the toilet seat.
What the fuck?
Like I said, people, that job shouldn't exist, but people still need to do it. And that's, I feel like a capitalist society predates that. People need this job, so it exists. And because people need these jobs to survive, such shitty jobs exist just to help people survive. And you get just this common lack of care among consumers. If you're going to like a big department store, you don't care. You leave your fucking. A lot of times, self-centered people will leave their carts out and fucking create a mess as they go. Be like, make decisions last second and put something that needs to be refrigerated on the fucking shelf.
No, I worked at Meijer and I saw plenty of that. Well, people, I had people that I was a cashier, so people would come through my line and then they just leave shit all scattered throughout my line that they turned that they just changed their mind and didn't want, and then it's like, okay, thanks. Now I gotta
fucking do shit.
I gotta take all this stuff out and clean up my aisle, and then other people are gonna have to go and take this stuff back to return it to its proper shelving if it's not cold or refrigerated or frozen, in which case it's probably ruined by the time I see it.
Yep. But what I feel like in a lot of things with this with this society that we live in general, is the reason why we've seen so much of a shift lately into more alternative politics and leftist politics in general is because a lot of people out there now have worked those jobs. They've worked the jobs that no one wants, the food service jobs, the fast food jobs, the retail jobs, you know what I mean? But essentially, what I want to get into is the union-based economy that we had set up, that you had set up originally and planned. And I love it. I know Dave probably loves it, too.
Yeah, so why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. So I want to start off with that. I don't necessarily am trying to, like... I still, for certain situations, I think a vertical mode of production is like makes sense for such as a master apprentice relationships.
Yeah,
it makes sense. So I don't want to be like, oh, I'm anti
vertical
mode of production. But I still see utilities for certain situations, and if somebody wants to run their business like that, like. And in this type of society, like, they're all, by any means, they're allowed to do that. It's just that, I mean, just good luck.
Right.
Just good luck. I mean, if you, that's it. That being said, what we're doing, because there's two different sides to this. There's the ANCAP side, basically, and there's the ANCOM side of this. And there's basically two different society, well, two, I mean.
Two yeah, different kind of. Kind of models working together.
Yes, basically. And,
synergizing, if you will.
Yeah, synergy.
Yes. Yes. And basically, I'll start off with the ANCAP side, where basically what it is that you have your traditional labor unions, all right? They're using their collective bargaining power for the labor to... Well, even then, though, like I was talking about with the vertical modes of production. I mean, this would be implying that there's an owner of the company, but there would be a lot. I mean, with that amount of bargaining power with both the consumer side and the labor side, like they're going to eventually own like a good chunk of that company, though. But that being said, though, you have the labor side, the traditional labor union side. And then you have this idea I came up with, this is a consumer union. It's similar to the labor unions, but it's more for consumer protection and also to provide the lowest rates possible through collective bargaining. And also through by working together with labor unions, you have more leverage to do so for that. I'm going to pull up my notes real quick. But essentially what happens is that it prevents a situation where, like, oh, so you want lower, the customers want lower prices. Guess nobody gets raises at all anymore. because I don't want to take a hit to my profits, or the other way around, where the laborers get a raise and the prices go up for the consumers.
And then the consumers kind of get screwed over.
Yes, basically. So, It's basically like, imagine if you had a, I'm trying to figure out a good example using water. If there was a hose, a three-way hose, all right, and there was the business owner, the consumers, and a the laborers, and they're all connected to the hose. What makes the most sense is for, and none of them gone, the laborers and the consumers didn't want them to get wet at all. It makes the most sense for both of them to put, or not even necessarily, actually, not, that's not a good example. Three-way tug-of-war, yes, that's a better example. There's a three-way tug-of-war battle between the consumers, the laborers, and the owners of the company. It makes the most sense for the laborers and consumers to work together.
Yeah.
A lot of times, in a
society these days, consumers are employees.
Most consumers, working class is the biggest consumer.
Consumers
are naturally, most of the case, workers themselves.
And that's also one of the biggest cries for socialism as well, is because you get a lot of stagnation up top. The more wealth you have, the less you want to spend it. And I understand. I mean, if I came into a lot of money, I would want to keep it like that too. Especially if I had it handed to me by just being born to the right family.
Exactly. You don't want to ruin that, you know.
I know, I actually had this argument once. You know this person. I'm not going to mention their name on an open mic. But it's the same guy who supports Trump just because Trump's a capitalist and he thinks anyone on the Democrats is a socialist.
He's not a neocon.
He's a paleocon. And essentially what he believes... essentially, he's more into Reaganomics than he is into Trumponomics. Trollonomics, yes. Essentially, though, we had this debate one time, and he posted this on Facebook, because he's a personal friend of mine, and it's about Mark Cuban. For those of you who don't know who Mark Cuban is, he's more famous for just owning things. I know that sounds kind of weird. The man's net worth is like $4.3 billion. Which normally, you know, I'm a leftist. I don't like billionaires. But I said, I don't like billionaires because I don't think that they got that money genuinely. I don't think that they put in the amount of work that they say they have. But I will digress and I will say at least he reinvested it back. Because this man is on Shark Tank. And the only reason why I know this is because my mother-in-law fucking loves Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And anytime before we were married, anytime that I was over there, 9 times out of 10, at one point, and the weekend, my then fiance and I were watching Shark Tank with her mom. Mark Cuban will invest, and he will buy something, build it up, and then sell it. And he will invest in small businesses to make them economically viable in the big markets.
Yes.
He takes the money that he's gotten and he gives it back. He is essentially, he's not really a class trader. He makes sure that other people have the same opportunities that he could have, that he had growing up. He wants to make sure that other people can have that opportunity too. There's nothing wrong with that. In a capitalist society, if you do that, you're a good person. You understand that not everyone has the same gold, silver spoon. Some of them have a bigger spoon, some of them have a little spoon, some of them have no fucking spoon. Mm-hmm. But essentially you can just reinvest and he'll be fine. And I feel like that's what a lot of people like to misconstrue. A lot of people on the right who are very big anti-socialist people, they misconstrue that argument. They don't want to listen to people saying, well, I don't like people who sit on their wealth. You know, there's nothing wrong with having wealth. If you redistribute it, you're fine.
At some point, though...
It's insane.
There is a level of this is normal and necessary in case something like a pandemic happens that affects major segments of the economy, because then savings is what you go back to rely on.
Yeah. So then you have a lot of riots break out because of that, and because some guy killed a black man, and then eventually your entire country goes down, and you realize, man, all this savings shit ain't worth shit anymore because the economy just crashed.
I mean, yeah, it depends on what you save your money into, you know?
Guns.
Well, I mean, like, this is why I don't think it's wise to just have a savings account full of dollars when the dollar is just fiat, paperless money that can be,
yes,
you know, inflated the fuck all. That you need to invest a lot of it in
hard assets that will retain their value.
Yep. We'll get into that a little bit later, too, though.
Yeah, we were talking about with, like, just sitting on your wealth, yeah. like, and not doing anything. Yeah, I'm a very big proponent of flexing your property rights in the most generative way possible.
Yeah, yeah, like, that's so nothing wrong totally with that.
Yeah, and so, like, if I had that much money, I can't really fucking justify just not doing anything positive with it. Like, I got all my shit I fucking need.
Right.
Like, let's go fucking help some people out, man.
Right, dude. That's... And that's redistribution of wealth. You got everything you need. Yeah. One of the questions, because I do a lot of moderating and stuff on Left Book, and it is as stressful as it sounds, yes. In fact, at one point, I literally told most of the people to fuck off. I don't care anymore. Essentially, what it boils down to is we had someone come in like, hey, you just won the $1 million lottery. What do we do? And we had an entire group. It was 5,000 of us. And we had an entire group discussion about essentially why it's okay to cover your own bases. A lot of people were saying, if I had a $1 million house, I would go out and, you know, take like 300,000 of that and get myself set up for life, put 200,000 of it away in savings so I can at least live moderately, and then give all the rest of it away to people that I care about, people that I know that will need that kind of money. You know, $100,000 is still a lot of money, and if you give that to a homeless person, man, I can guarantee you if that person is there because they got laid off and they just had a rough time and a rough year and got, you know, they will be able to take that 100 and turn it around into a point where they are living almost on the same standards you were living on before you even won the lottery. And that levels the playing field so much.
A lot of the things from people that are anti this sort of mentality is that they are worried of... It's that whole mindset of, oh, well, now they're just going to rely on this and they aren't going to be productive as much. They're going to go blow it and waste the investment I gave them. They're worried about.
Yeah. Like, I don't play the lottery personally, but because the odds that if you winning it are very, 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 very abysmally low.
You're more likely to get struck by lightning.
You will spend more money playing the lottery than you will winning the lottery. But again, that's beside the point. The thing about the lottery I had a coworker of mine come up, and she paid for the ticket. She paid for the ticket and everything. And she's like, well, we'll split the money 50-50 if it wins. And I was like, okay. Like, $16 million. I was like, what would you do with I'm like, $8 million? Fuck yeah, I'll split it. I was like, you wonder what I could do for $8 million? I was like, they're like, you could stop working at this place. I'm like, no. Why would I do that? I would go out, I'd find a decent house that I'd want, or I'd go out, buy land, and put a house that I know me and my wife would want, you know, just big enough for what we have planned for our future. I would go out, get the fucking truck that I want, the car that I want, I would set myself up so that I know that I will be happy with my life. And then the rest of it, I'll figure it out when I get there. You know, I'll figure it out. I'll probably, you know, I can guarantee you with how many circles I'm in, I will be donating that fucking thing away. Like, someone will be like, hey, man, I might be getting evicted, man. Like, hey, here's $3,000. Go take a shit on your landlord's doorstep. Like, and what happens if they press charges? Here's $10,000. Hire a good lawyer and have them take a shit on their doorstep, too. Here's $5,000 to make sure that they do take that shit.
Like, buy the whole apartment complex and let everybody stay there for free.
Exactly, dude.
I like that.
Like, dude, power moves. Like, that's why. That's why I think that if we had honest leftists in control of a lot more money, we would be living in a better off society where we wouldn't have to deal with poverty and human suffering.
I think this is also really what makes fuels liberals into voting for Democratic policies.
Yes.
And I understand that.
It's what also feels leftists in general into it. Leftists usually get strong-armed into it because, well, it could be this guy who is not bad, or it could be this guy who wants to see you dead. And it's just like, well, I mean, obviously I'm going to go with the guy who hates me, but it's like, hey, I'm not going to kill you, though.
Yeah, it's obviously better, but it's like, and then at the same time, though,
that corruption is...
The corruption's still there.
Exactly.
So it's essentially you have to make a deal with the devil just to let the devil... or just asking to live. And that's... If that's an allegory for people who are thinking about voting, you're voting and you're literally asking, am I, if my life is worth it? That's what essentially this, a lot of voting is for a lot of people in this country. Mm-hmm. But anyways, we're getting off track again. It happens.
Oh yeah. And basically, what I would like to see with that, on that more handicapped side of a society, I was talking with Bobby Ruiz with this about this, and I was talking. We're talking about like a hierarchy of ownership of the means of production, basically. Yeah. And I mean that in a sense, not necessarily in relationship of the person who's actually like working with the means of production. Well, basically, different setups of. I'm sure I forgot the best way to describe it. I'm basically running the business, basically. So best case scenario would be a individual, one single individual running the business. Second, right below that would be like a vertical mode of production, which would be
like a board of directors, maybe.
Like a what?
Like a board of directors, maybe, like a council kind of thing.
I use this term all the time. Why am I blanking out on it? On a co-op. Okay, a co-op.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So basically at the top is a, sole proprietor, one person running business. That would be on the type of hierarchy, top of the hierarchy. Right below that would be a co-op. And then out of the bottom would be your traditional vertical production firm. And basically is that... the reason why there's a hierarchy for this is because the more decentralized a market economy is, it means it's more competitive. Yeah. All right, the more competitive it is, the more people win. So that's when I say like there's a hierarchy. The most decentralized it can ever get is down to the single individual, basically.
Yeah.
So if we could get these, as many businesses popped up by sole proprietors as possible, then it would just make the market more, basically, more business, it means there would be more businesses, and more businesses they have competing against each other. Better quality products we're going to have, more innovations we're going to have. And so we should try to try to get to that point. But how we go about doing that is important too. We got to have it do through, not through violence or anything, but like
right.
through social manipulation, basically. I mean, it could just be giving the people the money to do it, or
violence is the social manipulation too.
What's up?
Violence is social manipulation too.
Oh, I mean, like non-violent social manipulation, to be specific.
Let's incentivize people without that as much as we can.
but listen.
Don't tell the insurrectionists they can't burn stuff down. That's just.
They can burn stuff down. They just got to build it up first.
I'm fine with that.
They got what?
Just got to build it up. I'm fine with that. Building an agorist economy to burn down the one that sucks. Listen, you can build the agorist economy all you want. Just tell me when you're done and you're good. I'll go start lighting some matches. We're going to have some fun.
but what I'm getting at, though, is... what I'm getting at, though, is that... shit, what the fuck I was talking about?
ADHD.
So we determined that the situation is whether somebody needs to be mentally in it, like, there, it's just, like... What's preventing them is not necessarily a lack of material conditions of the situation, but it's actual like a mental conditions of the situation per se.
Yeah.
That's preventing them from creating a business and further decentralizing the economy. Like, you go ahead and try to enable them to do that, and whether if it's a material conditions of the situation. Give them the shit and let them do their thing, basically.
Right.
That's basically, that's how you would
That's the way the cookie crumbles.
Trying to get to that sole proprietor, because I think that's the way to go. I try to get as single owners as many single owners of a business as possible. But like I said, there are certain situations for, like, you're gonna have to have more than one people cooperating on this. So a co-op,
right?
Or, like, let's say if it was a master apprentice, it just makes. I mean, just because of how the deal is, it's like I can't really. If somebody's literally teaching you a whole new skill that you can survive off of, I mean, you don't really have that negotiable leverage to, like, give them,
there's a market specifically for partial
ownership of, you know, the business. I mean, you could, I mean, not saying you can't try, but, like, I mean, they have too much, you know, power in that situation. And to be fair, though, I mean, it's, you're getting a really good fucking deal, because after you get that skill, you just get the fuck out.
Right.
I mean, we should encourage this kind of market where it's literally teaching aids.
You know
what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
we should.
Trades and skills. No matter what they are.
I'm sorry, I thought you said aids there for a second and it threw me for a loop. I was mid-drinking, about ready to do a spit take.
We're going to teach people about aids.
We should teach. AIDS is a real epidemic. Be careful about it. Wrap your tool before you...
Wrong kind of AIDS. Not those kind of AIDS.
It's still a real epidemic, though. We still need
to... No, I mean, imagine...
AIDS Awareness Day.
Say, hey, you want to learn, like, technology, like, basic design software. Okay, what about, you know, what specific kind of software do you want? You know, okay, you want this software? Okay, we'll have... You know, there's this group of people that has this person willing to teach people how to use it.
Right.
And so, and stuff like this is what helps encourage workers and makes them more productive, and not only that, but increases their bargaining ability as a worker.
Right. Yes, and one of my issues is that we also have, and this isn't an issue. I've seen it with the left. I've been trying to combat it as it comes up, but this is again another society issue. Is when people go to colleges and stuff, there are trades out there. For instance, the trade that I'm looking into is one of the best, easiest job markets to get into, because there's always need for it in this kind of day and age. That's mechanical engineering. In Michigan, there's a 14% growth rate projected for the next 10 years. It's very low cost to get into school. You need 4 years to get a decent job, and a decent job is usually like 60-70K right off the bat. It's a lot of times companies will recruit you halfway through that 4 year process, give you an internship, and then depending on the company, some of them will outright pay your entire tuition for the 4 years, or for at least for the 2 years that you're working with them. One thing that we need to combat is the idea that going to college is only for people who want to be doctors and lawyers and people who want to be scientists.
There are some jobs, definitely, that you need college-level education for. Like, obviously, I don't want some dumbass high school, graduate working on some surgery for me. Like, you know.
The heart's right here, I think. Fucking stab.
Yeet! Eat that heart.
Full fucking send right straight through the fifth rib. Dude.
You got a fly in here.
Yeah, you...
Oh, I fucking missed it.
You missed it, and he just got the shit scared out of him onto my computer screen.
Anyway, but yeah, there are definitely some jobs that require a high level of specific classroom type of education. But I think it also needs to be balanced with sort of like shadow workers and like I said, internships where it's hands-on experience in said market too. Because a lot of people, they don't really learn well in a classroom. They have to work in an actual work environment. And so things like apprenticeships and all that kind of stuff, that is more valuable to me than just sitting in a classroom learning something. For that I saw.
Oh, yeah.
I hated college because of that.
Yeah. Like I was saying earlier off mic, I'm more of a hands-on learner, so if I'm doing something that engages my body, my brain will learn better.
Yes.
I went through summer school a lot. I went through guided academics a lot because I just couldn't pay attention in class because I have ADHD, And one of my ways to cope with the whole can't pay attention thing is if I'm fidgeting with something, I can concentrate. So if I'm like doing something with my hands, I'm like, okay, I know what's going on now. So I'd be sitting there playing a computer game or fucking going through Facebook while listening to the lecture and just be like, all right, cool. And if there's like something I need clarification, I'll just go back to the lecture and fucking watch it again.
Oh, also going back to colleges, Joe Biden is definitely part of the reason of the student loan debt problem.
Oh, yeah.
Because he wrote and campaigned for the bankruptcy bill that exempted student loans from bankruptcy. So he gave universities a free pass, basically, to jack up tuition and allowed loan companies to offer loans without fear of risk. So easily over $1 trillion is on Joe Biden's head.
Yep, so and people think he's going to save them from
it. No, and I will say, a lot of leftist positions, like, again, anti-racism, the police and all this shit, like, he wrote part of that 1994 crime bill.
Yeah.
So,
and then Kamala Harris isn't any better either.
No, she fucked over so many work people.
See, what pisses me off is there was a ball dropped in 2016, and that ball just rolled over to 2020. They dropped the ball because they looked at Trump, and they watched as this outsider came into the Republican Party and beat out every strong Republican contender that they had.
Yeah.
And just fucking walked with it. And they watched this happen and said, we're going to pick someone that we think can do lip service well. They didn't pick for the clear choice, which would have been Sanders, because he had the more activated base. They went for the one who they thought was going to be safe, which was Clinton. And probably because DWS thought that if they didn't go with Clinton, DWS would end up with a mysterious suicide. Neither here nor there.
DWS.
Yeah. They dropped the ball with that.
Who is DWS?
Is what he's Debbie Wasserman Schultz was the chairman for the Democratic National Party back in 2016.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay.
And when they lost the election, she stepped down like a week after because there was a lot of blowback. And that blowback continued to now, where they looked at Trump and they said, we just need a body. We don't need someone who can compete with him. We just need a body because he competes with himself. And they gave us Biden, who is quite possibly the worst body they could have thrown. And then they gave us Harris on top of it.
They gave us two of the most hated Democrats in the party and said, oh, this will be good enough to beat Trump.
And it's the funny thing is they don't care. They don't want policy change. They just want to be in power.
What the fuck was that?
Hey, we're going to pause this real quick.
I'd probably vote for a tanky over, like, any of these fuckers.
Oh, dude. Totally. Hands down. Hands down.
To be honest, I would totally vote for a tanky over, like, fucking Biden or fucking Trump.
I would vote for a tanky in a heartbeat just because I want to see some interesting shit happen. Give me Dave's still here. Give me one second. I have to go fix the blind that just fell.
I mean, I like tankies because they mean well.
Well, they always mean well. Though. Oh yeah, what? I would say they're definitely well intentioned, but sometimes. Well, I mean that's not even true all the cases. Some I've seen, they definitely just want to fucking get in power and then fucking yeet liberals. It's like, okay.
Again, don't have a problem with that.
I mean, I understand hating liberals, but I don't want a fucking murderous regime, all right? Unless they're murdering the right people. I mean,
unless they're
you know.
The right people.
They need to murder.
You know what we mean.
They don't want to kill the right people, all right? Just a bunch of like normies who vote liberal. Like, no, I don't think we should kill them, but maybe just like.
I think anyone in the alt-right quadrant can just die, and I'll be happy about it. Oh shit! I said that out loud. On an open mic. Alright. But yeah, so...
You know, because... I was... Because the main reason, though, is that, like... Alright. What I see... If... I'm not gonna vote, but... Let's say if I was to vote, though... I could totally see, like... Getting a tanky like to give, like, you know, for the confiscation of homestead principle. I can see that, like, happening, like, actually happening in the off-left society.
Yeah.
Than a than off-right. I could totally see that happening. I mean, they have the fucking grounds to do it, to be honest. I mean,
if you think about it, the alt-right is kind of a poisonous ideology. It's one that is, it's, whenever they get power, they hold power. We've seen this happen multiple times throughout all of history. They hold power, they hold power, they hold power. And the funny thing is, and I was watching a video on this, and it was a video that I'll probably post in the links, just to shout out. It's an alternate history video. It's a What If Alt Hist. It's the future wars that could be very well likely breaking out within the next couple decades. And one of them is the perceived war between America and China. And it's one that says that it's anytime there's a rising economic power to challenge a current dominating economic power, the rising power will either surpass the dominant one, and the dominant one will go through a period of internal strife, or the dominant one will smack down the rising power. And I think right now we're on the road to the dominant power getting into internal strife, which is what we're dealing with right now in our society today.
Yeah.
What would be the, you're talking about the off-right?
Yes. The off-right wants to hold on to that power because they see an off-left taking it from them. And they don't want that. But essentially what they're also watching is a rising off-left in their own backyard, along with a rising bottom two quadrants as well. Essentially,
neo-Stalinism.
Yeah, essentially it's like the Overton window isn't just shifting left, it's growing and encompassing the entire compass.
Yeah, so, basically.
Fucking shit. This is beautiful.
Yeah.
What so, a sight to behold.
It's the Boogaloo, boys.
Boogaloo. Now we just gotta make it, now we just gotta get center right avaricianism a thing now.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Center-right avaricianism.
Abolish the right.
All right. Anyway, so one of the reasons why, and this is one of the reasons why I hate Reaganomics, is the abolishment of gold. I can't really say this is Reaganomics, because this was Nixon.
So Nixonomics.
It's Nixon. Nixonomics is corruption. That's all it is. But it was originally one of the starts of our own problems. It's the elimination of the gold standard. Now, for those of you who don't know, it's a monetary system that links a currency's value to that of gold. You know, you have the oil standard, you have the gold standard, the silver standard, you know, whatever. Back in the Great Depression era, with the New Deal, FDR, who is by far probably one of my more likable presidents. And again, I say likable, being that I already have a disdain for him because he was a president. But I like him because he did decent things. Except for, the, you know, the whole Japanese internment camps. But we'll just look the other way, just like Trumpers do with the kids in cages. Anyway, so they, to help combat the Great Depression, they started severing off some ties and allowing the government to print its own money to help. Because at the Great Depression was a time of deflation, I believe, right? No, it was a time
I'm
of.
Not,
deflation.
I'm not expert on this.
I don't know. The Great Depression economics was really. I fell asleep in that class, to be honest with you. It was between World War I and World War II.
High school.
It was between World War One and the war that everyone actually cares about. So,
nobody cares about World War One.
No one cares about World War One. That's why I said World War One and the war that everyone cares about. Because World War Two is honestly the whole reason why we're in the situation now. If you think about it, World War Two was. You can't talk about history and just be like, by the way, 1939 to 1945, nothing happened. Like, that, those 6 years, nothing happened. You can't do that because there was an entire world-changing event. Kingdoms
that was,
died.
That was one of the most
generational changing events to occur. And its after effects are still lingering.
Still felt today, even through the Cold War.
Yep.
But essentially, right now, they got rid of the gold standard. And like we alluded to earlier in the episode, in 1971, Nixon cut off the gold standard completely. So instead of having a regulated economy, we now have an economy that is just erratic. The government can print money essentially whenever it wants. It's tied to nothing, so its value is nothing. As soon as the government doesn't exist, the value disappears. So, that kind of really does give rise to the whole moneyless society that a lot of the people on the left, like myself included, just want. I don't feel the need, again, I said this multiple times, I don't feel the need for us to need money.
I think it's because we lack real, valueful money.
Yeah.
Because states bastardize it, and they'll inflate it. I mean, now, some of the times, corporations can do the same thing. But generally, it's government manipulated that has really affected us the most right now.
And even everyone will say that when Nixon cut off that gold standard in 72, it dampened inflation. So it helped first, and then it just kind of sunk. It's like you saved a ship. And then you turn around and watch as you put another hole in the ship. So, essentially, we saved ourselves, and then it just fucking just died anyway. So, and that's the fallout. And then, of course, you had Reagan come after him, and he introduced trickle-down economics, which is the worst idea in the history of mankind. And then he's like, hey, but... You want to know where we're going to get all this money from? We're going to get money from drugs. By, you know...
Starting drug the war on drugs, yeah. And now it's literally just a fucking cash and authoritarian power grab.
Yep. Well, anyways, there is the idea of going back to the gold standard that has been passed around by... I think Ron Paul is actually championing it right now. I don't care for it. I don't care for it. This is just me speaking as someone who doesn't care for money. I think that it's abstract. It's an obsolete concept. Currency is. I don't care for it. I think that we should be valuing things based on sentimental and overall necessity needs. Because mostly I view this as we kind of tied it more or less to oil for a little bit there. We tied our currency to oil so that we could maintain our empire through...
Yeah, Kissinger did that right after Reagan
got
rid of the dollar standard, gold standard.
Yeah. We tied it to oil, and now that we're the biggest exporter, we can't really maintain our economy anymore because of free trade. So either we're left to deal with the fact that we now have to embrace a socialistic nature, or we just have to get rid of currency. Which, in the end, if we embrace socialistic nature, we will end up in getting rid of currency. So, we're the end game here is that currency, I feel, is going to be something that is going to be a dead technology here in the next couple centuries. Not, obviously, in the next couple, years, but centuries.
It also, it depends on what type of, what kinds of currency you're talking about. Because if you're talking about fiat currency, I would agree. That's definitely going to eventually go down the toilet and never come back.
Yeah. And one thing that bothers me, though, is I hear a lot, and I know I'm sounding like a broken record because I've said this at least two times in two different episodes. I hear a lot of people say that Bitcoin is a thing, that Bitcoin will replace the American dollar as the paramount currency in the world. Bitcoin won't. Bitcoin, to me, is another fiat currency. There's not really much of a way to try to regulate it. It's just a fucking runaway train. And I feel like it's just asinine, you know what I mean?
I mean, like I said, as far as I'm aware, I was very unknowledgeable into what actual utility Bitcoin will actually provide workers. But
here's the thing with so BTC, Bitcoin, okay. Bitcoin's trash. The Bitcoin that we're there's various other cryptocurrencies out there. The one that is the highest amount. That's like, I don't know, I haven't changed to track BTC for a while, but BTC's is not worth the price of way it's way it says on the market. BTC's fucking trash. BCH, which is Bitcoin Cash, by far superior to it. You could actually and Ethereum, you could actually run have applications be ran on the on the actual blockchain. And what basically with Ethereum, how you interact with these applications that are built on top of the blockchain, you just use the currency for it, and that's where the currency gets its value from, basically, from the utilities it provides, other than just a way to transfer value from other places. These cryptocurrencies, where all they're just useful for. For it's just transferring value from place, they ain't worth shit. The ones that where they actually have a application where you can have applications built on top of them, like Ethereum, or they have they're basically as a way to interact with the application. Those are the ones that are actually worth something. So there's with these current generation of cryptocurrencies, there's actually utilities for these. For these coins,
I will say I believe Venezuela actually is heavily using Dash.
Oh, they really?
Yeah, and I also heard that even when they were still able to use it for a lot of trading, even when they had their their electric grid went down.
Dude, shout out to Venezuela though. Dude, shout out to every South American country. South American revolutionary politics is essentially what's keeping the left alive right now, which is why you get a lot of whole neo-leftism with a lot of anti-racism and it's embracing the idea that what we're seeing right now is the rebirth of the new world, I guess. It's the idea that the colonizers have just finally put the colonized people on a level playing field, and now they want their land back, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Venezuela has been one of the ones that have been getting a comeuppance with it. If Brazil can get rid of Bolsonaro, which is another thing that the fifth column brought up, is that if we get rid of Trump, or no, it's actually it wasn't Bo. Shit, it was one of my friends who actually moderates that Violently American group. They brought it up, whereas if we can get Trump out of office, the chances of Bolsonaro losing the next election in Brazil would be high too, because people also don't like Bolsonaro.
Okay.
Yeah, essentially a lot of the South American politics kind of come full circle back around to American politics.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, I just thought that was interesting. I'm not sharing it just to start a discussion. I just thought that was interesting. I don't know why. But, anyway, one of the other points that I want to talk about, especially with the free market economies, and why I think that it's not exclusive, is There was a man, I want to say from Scotland. Yes. Scottish American. Yes. Alan J. Pinkerton. Anyone who knows the Pinkerton name knows exactly what I'm going to be talking about here. He was essentially a leftist in 1800 terms. Today he'd be considered center right, but he was he was a staunch abolitionist. He didn't like the idea of slavery. He wanted labor unions to be essentially in complete control of the market. He wanted laborers to be able to be free. Essentially, he set up something called the Pinkerton National Detective Agency, which was supposed to be essentially a community defense network for workers.
Yeah, it was mutual aid in the form of defense, basically.
Yeah, it was one of the original ideas. And for anyone who knows what Pinkerton is, you know, famous for, is the Battle of Blair Mountain. Now, I'll get into that in a bit, but essentially, the Pinkerton was set up to help out labor, especially railroad workers, because, you know, you'd be out in the Wild West and you'd get robbed a lot. You'd get attacked by, you know, Native Americans that want their land back and just, you know, hate those white people.
Fucking white people.
Fucking white people.
We say this as we're white people.
I fucking hate white people. Are the reason why I drink anyway. But I would like to point out that Alan Pinkerton actually died before the turn of the century, and the Battle of Blair Mountain happened in 1921. And the 20s were an interesting time for labor movements. Just because, you know, going on in the world, we have the rise of the USSR. We have a lot of other socialistic governments popping up around that time, too. It's just the fallout of the kingdoms that were once great in Europe falling, and after the aftermath of World War One, and now, you know, excuse me. So, essentially, what the Pinkerton National Detective Agency was set up for was to help protect railroad workers and their families, and it was to help, you know, make sure that there was no disputes, everything went fine, and make sure that the workplace was safe. But after Pinkerton's death, you know, and corporations were just starting to be on the rise, you have, there is corporations that, you know, as we all know, like to seek to break any kind of competition that could be threatening to them.
Mm-hmm.
This is the end game of late-stage corporatism, I should say. Not necessarily capitalism. I feel like late-stage capitalism is more or less supposed to give into more of a socialistic kind of economy.
It's supposed to, I would say, bring in and enable that socialist...
Yeah.
Sort of...
People like to stagnate on it a lot, so...
Yeah.
And essentially we get late-stage capitalism, but late-stage corporatism is essentially where you get that stagnation going on.
That's where you get into that corporatist fascism.
And this was back when we decided that, you know, the oil must flow kind of thing. And this was back during the steam engine days when we didn't really have oil as a means. It was mostly just steam locomotives doing shit. Essentially what it was you needed coal. Coal was your main source of power, so coal was king. And it stayed like this for 40 years, essentially. It was the second industrial revolution. The third industrial, I believe, was actually oil.
Yeah.
So, anyways, during the labor strikes of the late 19th and early 20th centuries, businessmen hired the Pinkerton Agency to infiltrate unions. Now, this is after Pinkerton's death. They started hiring the agency to infiltrate unions, supply guards, keep strikers and suspected unionists out of factories, and recruit goon squads to intimidate workers. This is the Homestead Strike of 1892, when Pinkerton agents were called in to reinforce the strike-breaking measures of industrialist Henry Clay Frick, acting on behalf of Andrew Carnegie, who was, I believe, an oil mogul? Hold on one second. Oh, hey, look at this. He's another Scottish. Okay. That just seems kind of interesting.
I'm Scottish.
Get the fuck out of my house.
Alrighty then. End of episode.
Alright, everyone, bye. Anyway.
Damn, it be like that sometimes, man.
It be like that.
I don't think it be like it is, but it do.
It do. American steel oh, yeah, steel. He was the head of the steel industry. I always thought it was oil for some reason.
He reduced the price of steel.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's cool. He also has blood on his hands. The ensuing battle between Pinkerton agents and striking walkers led to the deaths of 3 Pinkerton agents and 9 steel walkers.
I believe that was him.
Carnegie?
Someone reduced the price of steel bars from like almost a dollar to like 11 cents or something like that.
He was apparently an anti-imperialist. Oh, no. He wasn't. He was one of them fancy alt-right anti-imperialists. Well, it's only good if I do it.
Oh.
During the aftermath of the Spanish-American War. Yeah, he's,
We're talking about Carnegie? Are you talking about Carnegie right now?
Carnegie, yeah. He was an anti-imperialist only because he's seen profit in markets that the Spanish Empire held. So he wanted to break the Spanish Empire using the American Empire.
So he is
exactly what you would expect out of a corporate fascist.
Okay, yeah, I can totally see that.
So, he gave formal allegiance to the Republican Party as a violent opponent of some of the most sacred doctrines of the party. Okay. Anyway, so there's nothing about him on the whole fucking making steel cheaper. I don't know about that.
Unless I'm thinking of someone else.
You might be. I know there's a couple other steel moguls that were around at that time that didn't kill labor people. But there is they were using guards coal. Pinkertons were used as guards and coal, iron, and lumber disputes in Illinois, Michigan, New York, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. Including in West Virginia was the big daddy of all, the Battle of Blair Mountain. For those of you who don't know, what it was union. It was a union effort to unionize, and everyone was in agreement. Even the families of the union of the workers were in agreement to union. And it was in Appalachia, and essentially this is where the whole state comes in, because this was a battle between the Pinkertons and a very poor armed community of steel workers, coal miners. My bad, and they. It was 10,000 armed coal miners confronted 3,000 lawmen and strikebreakers who were backed by coal mine operations during the miners' attempt to unionize in southwestern West Virginia coal fields when tensions rose between workers and mine management. Battle ended, approximately 1 million rounds were fired, and the United States Army, represented by the West Virginia Army National Guard, led by McDowell County native William Eubanks, intervened by a presidential order. So what we have here is we have a federal government coming in to put down an unrest situation brought on by a corporation. The state,
and they sided with the corporation.
And they sided with the corporation because the corporation gave them kickbacks. Essentially what we have is a state came in, said, we like these people because these people have money. And they have something that we want. So what we're going to do is we're going to tell you to go home. You will continue to make product for us. You will continue to make product for these people. If you resist, you will be arrested. If you resist violently, you will be killed.
That isn't employment. That's enslavement.
That's enslavement, yes. These people, these laborers, they wanted out. They wanted a better lifestyle for them. They wanted a better working condition. And essentially what happened is a corporation got in bed with the government and said, this is a problem. They outnumber us. They can easily kill us. Bring in your technologically advantaged and trained people and put this down for us. This is not a free market.
Well, that's absolutely not a free market.
This is a...
I will say, this is something that a lot of ANCAPs need to work on if they're going to even try to persuade people to their ideology, is that this whole idea of keeping corruption in corporations and businesses in check between workers and their employers.
Yes.
Because that's a huge thing. You know, if a worker dies due to some reason on a factory floor...
Yeah,
you know, they need to be able to make sure that the family or whatever can be compensated at the very least, and if it's an issue directly brought on because of the employer, that they can directly be sued for it.
Yes,
things like that to ensure
worker safety, and this also affects consumers too.
Yeah.
What consumer wants to fund a company that treats their employees like shit and makes them work in an unsafe work
environment? I typically try to avoid, like, I'll window shop through Amazon, and if I find something that I want through Amazon, I will go to the actual supplier and buy it from their site, because it helps the local business a lot of times.
And you're not giving money to Bezos.
And I'm not giving fucking money to Bezos or Amazon, because Amazon is terrible with its employees.
I had a coworker at the job I was laid off at. He used to work in an Amazon distribution plant.
Yeah.
And said, yeah, they're pretty fucking strict on
it. I had a guy come through my drive-thru one time, and he was pretty pissed off. But he's like, 2 more weeks and I'm out of this. And I was like, dude, hell yeah.
Good
he's
for
like,
you.
He's like, we're thinking about unionizing. And I was like, dude, we are too.
Damn it.
Yeah, I'm trying to, I need to, Tyler, you can probably send me over some information. But I need to start figuring out ways to get, like, some, like, organizing people where I work at to start making a fucking union. Because I would love to fucking do that. Like, just go start working places, random places, and start organizing unions and fucking dip out.
I mean, there is, I will always say, go with the IWW. They are one of the best unions around because they're syndicalists to begin with. They believe that everything should be worker run. So they stick heavily to their ideals. And they're very good with their vetting procedures with it. And they're fucking nationwide. They're the biggest union around. So
get people direct people to the IWW and go from there, basically.
Yep. Yeah, essentially that's what I tried doing with my factory a long time ago. And the issue that you're going to run into with that is people don't want to pay $6 a month to keep their job.
That's nothing.
I know. That's what I said. Like I was sitting there talking to the IWW rep, and I was like, yeah, so we make this much. He's like, well, everyone who joins the union will pay $6 a month. We're like, that's not bad.
That's cheaper than a fucking Netflix account.
Yeah. I was like, dude, are you telling me that I could pay $6 a month and have someone have in my back if management decides one day to fire my ass because I wore the wrong t-shirt?
That's your own worker's insurance policy, basically.
And, like, that's what a lot of people don't understand in this day and age, is right-to-work laws exist. And for those of you who don't know what right-to-work laws are, they're not right-to-work laws. They're your employer can fire you on the spot, essentially, and you can't fucking say shit about it because right to work laws allow that to happen. It's very anti-union, and it's harmful to both consumers and employees, because, you know, it makes people out of a job, and you can't have a strong economy if there's no one working. Because there's no money being thrown around, and if there's no money being thrown around, then there's no money.
More importantly, there's nothing is being produced. The efficiency and amount of production is what really is the backbone of how much an economy can grow, you know?
Right.
There's nothing to buy if there's nothing being produced, you know?
Yeah, so.
Damn consumerism.
Oh, God. I fucking hate consumerist cucks.
Bye, dude. I hate it because it permeates throughout every fucking subculture and then in this society these days, where it's like, you know, you get for instance, I don't know about you, Matt, but we're both gun guys here, essentially. We're both into guns. We're getting into it, and
I need more money for guns, bro. I want to get into back in. Well, I had a Desert Eagle in 1911 for a little bit, but I had it like I was. Fucking hard to unlock for cash.
This fucking guy.
Like last year, and I had to sell it.
That's fair.
I loved that gun.
I bet that was a good gun. But,
yeah.
Dude, there is a burn mark on this piece of plastic on my keyboard. I am going to kill someone. Anyway, who the fuck let that pass? Anyway, I know there is, I got a Wazir 10 as my primary right now. And for anyone who doesn't know, that's an AK-47 clone. It's a Romanian AK-47. Works, fires all the same as the regular OG gun. Now, I can get shit for it all I want. That's a $700 low budget AK that is assembled using military or spec parts. So it's, I know that's going to be as reliable as the original itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have, you know, some attachments on there are kind of cheap. The reason why is because why should I spend money? Why should I spend an extra $300 just for a named item when I could get one that's a Chinese knockoff that does the same fucking job for cheaper? And I understand there's the whole QC issues with reliability. Look, it's not part of the gun that goes bang. As long as I know that the sights maintain a zero for a good enough time, I'm good.
I mean, yeah, it's all that really matters is the quality of product, not the brand. I really hate name brand shit. Like, just for buying name brand things just for the sake of being name brand.
It's
the dumbest thing ever.
It's in the current events episode, I talked about this, but it's the idea that
brand loyalty.
It's the idea of brand loyalty, yes.
If it's not based on actual quality of the good or service you get, it's fucking stupid. Unless it's like customer service or something.
Yeah.
If their product isn't the best.
Yeah.
Those are really the only two things that matters is the quality and efficiency of the product or service.
Yeah.
And the actual customer-consumer response and relationship. That's really the only two things that really matter.
Yep.
Aesthetics is being gay.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Ugly is ain't cool.
But like,
that's basically what I said.
And like,
yeah, that's basically what I said.
another good example of the whole consumerist lifestyle being just terrible and essentially predatory free markets is, if you look at cars, now, we had recently, I'll tell you this from being, I'm pretty sure you could probably verify this, being both of us insiders and essentially to some point in the automotive industry.
Yeah.
There was, over the past few years, we've watched the American mid-size car market completely cave in.
The smaller cars are getting out. Like Ford is starting to phase out all their sedans, and now it's a big SUV and truck market now.
Yep. And now we're watching foreign cars move in and steal the spotlight.
Which they are allowed to do.
And yeah, they can, and it's because they're better. I used to drive a Ford Fusion, and don't get me wrong, fucking loved that car. That car was great, man. 3-liter V6 on a fucking all-wheel drive. It only topped out at about 116 because I fucking tested it before. But it only topped out at that. But man, that thing fucking got when it needed to for a sedan. And I upgraded to a 20.
Oh, it's a hybrid motor.
Oh, no, it was no. Just a regular 3-liter. Not naturally aspirated.
It's a Ford Fusion, so it's electrical, though, right?
No. It was not electrical. Because they had an option to go...
Ford Fusion?
Yeah. They have an option to go hybrid, but it wasn't the hybrid.
Oh, I thought all Ford Fusions were hybrids.
No, this was a 2009.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they only... The recent hybrid Fusion was fairly new.
It was like... I think it was the newest gen that they just released. It started having hybrid as an
option.
One.
But yeah, the vast majority of Fusions out there are not hybrids.
Yeah, but I upgraded.
I was under the impression it was.
You're good.
I kind of get why you would think that, because it's in the name Fusion. Like
yeah.
Fusion, you know, you're fusing two things together.
I upgraded, though, to a 2016 Hyundai Sonata. And it's funny, because one day I was running the specs, and I'm like, you know, a 3-liter V6 all-wheel drive car get some fucking ass pretty quickly. That's good launch control and everything. I was like, I have an inline 4 2.4 liter in my Sonata right now. I was like, front-wheel drive, but I have the ability to go into a it's a semi-automatic transmission. I have the ability to go into manual, whereas my Fusion was
automatic.
You just shift. Yeah, it was automatic. You just shift to the low gear, and that's essentially your drag race mode. So I'm like, in a quarter mile, my Fusion would win because it had the muscle to fucking beat out the Sonata. But in a half a mile, my Sonata would fucking just surpass it. And by the time a full mile drag happened, I'd be seeing the Fusion's headlights in my rearview mirror. And that's kind of the illusion that I want to kind of put out here. When I was shopping for my new car, I got shat on because they're like, why are you going foreign? I'm like, because I don't want a truck. I want a sedan. And they're like, why are you going foreign? They're like, you're putting it up against the Chrysler 200. The Chrysler's better because that supports your own brand. I'm like, most...
With Chrysler's 200 suck.
They're not... They're not bad.
From all my... From the people I know,
yeah.
They don't like them.
They're your new cookie cutter sedan. The Fusion used to have the market on that, but the 200 started slowly starting to seep in. But essentially, it's the same difference where Chrysler's this big name brand, and it's like, this is your home market. Support your home brand. And Hyundai, most of the times, because it's cheaper to do this, instead of importing it, they have factories and assembly plants here in America.
Yeah.
That will make the cars for them for the American market and for, you know.
Same with Toyota and Honda.
They have their own factories here to make their own vehicles for this own market specifically. The reason being is because it just makes sense to do that. I got that car and I would put that car against any American-made vehicle, any American-made sedan today. And I will probably walk away with my Sonata still. Keys still in my hand, happy. Because even though it's a Hyundai, and even though it's not a well-known brand, and it's cheap because it's not a well-known brand.
It's a decent well-known brand to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent, but it's not like... You see more Hondas out there. Honda Civic's actually more expensive than the car outside that I have.
Yes.
And Civics are fucking shit. So, but it's because it's a known brand. Honda's a known brand. Toyota, a known brand. They're brands that have their own niche in the marketplace. Hyundai still has to make their own, you know, make their own demographic. I like it, you know.
I'm having some audio issues on. Your guys are like really low. Like I can't really hear you guys well.
Hold on 1 second.
Yeah, I'm gonna hang up and come back in so I see if we reset it real quick. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. One thing about the modern car market, it really kind of sucks is they keep requiring.
Okay. More. Yeah. It's.
Is it still doing it?
Wiring? Yeah, it's still doing it.
All right. If you want to just go ahead and we're. I mean, if you want to join us for next month, I don't know what we're doing, but.
I wanted to go over on the more about the left side of the more of the income side of the.
Yeah, we could do that. We could do that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is the audio issue on your side, or you guys know what's going on with it?
We can hear you.
We can hear you just fine.
Because like you guys are like you're it's like a lot lower, like you're I can't hear you guys as well, basically. That's what I'm saying.
Can you hear me better?
Yeah, I can hear you better.
All right.
Not as well as before. All right, it's fine. I'll just go do my thing. What was I going to say? Basically, so on the left side is that it's going to be like your traditional anarcho-communist setup. Where the, you know, it's a collective ownership that means production. You distribute the, you know, the products of labor to based off the needs of the individuals in that the commune. But
right.
What they're going to be doing as well is that they're going to be participating, basically using their means of production as a business as well to participate in basically, you know, the marketplace and like a global marketplace. And with that, this is more on the because there's two different styles I have created for this, which is the market, two different ways for these two different societies to interact. One is the market-based, which is, you know, trades, and there's the other one is the mutual aid-based. I need to make a diagram for the mutual aid-based one. I'm going to work on that tonight, and I could you know, I can send it to you if you guys so you can put in the video. But basically, though, is that the commune, you know, whatever the direction they want to take, what they want to use their collectively owned means of production, they make stuff with it, all right? They sell it, and they reinvest back in the commune. And whatever however they want to do, like, if they want to get that money, divide up all their profits.
And yeah.
Everybody who lives in the commune, they could do that. They have a certain percentage to go towards that, and they have a certain amount of reinvestment, so they can,
It's basically just a worker-owned business, right?
Basically a very large worker-owned co-op, but it's a town. But you live in it, though.
I mean, basically. Yeah. You can work in that. You have the work set up basically right next to where the workers live.
Yeah, and that's basically what it would be like. Internally it would be communist, but externally in the sense of how it interacts with other societies, it would be, socialist / capitalist, whatever way you want to look at it. I mean, it's kind of semantics at that point. But that's basically what it would be like. What are your thoughts?
I like it.
I like it too.
Yeah.
I love it, actually, because,
they're not using money within the actual, like, commune itself. That's still traditional, communist style. If somebody wanted to make their own business, house, and they wanted to do that, we don't have to. There's no reason why we people can't, just use their property as they want to, as long as it's not hurting people. But there's no reason why somebody couldn't do that.
Hey, Matt, you're starting to break up.
Yeah, I'm starting to break up. Okay, let me move a little bit closer here. The router a little bit. But basically, though, it's just using their means of production that I already have to participate in the marketplace. That's basically all it is.
Hell yeah.
And one thing, too, is that I think it would really be a really good idea because I watched this video. You guys know who Slashoff Zizek is, right?
Who? What?
Zizek. You know who Zizek is?
Yes, yes. Lavoj Zizek.
I don't.
Yeah.
He's
Oh, were you going to say Tyler?
He's a leftist kind of philosopher, I guess, right now.
Okay.
All right, so basically what he's talking about is that, there's a really good video he was having with this entrepreneur channel I like to watch. I'll send you guys over it tonight. But basically, though, was that he was saying that one of his issues he has with anarcho-communism is the fact that, that person is not going to want to be that involved with their community and for every single little decision making.
I will say
and
that.
So I was thinking
I'm just going to say that is a big thing where the more people you have in every single, decision-making process, the longer it's going to take for them to reach a consensus based on that decision, So it makes the system more and more inefficient the more people you have, unless you can find a way to circumvent it.
So my thing is that I have a couple solutions to this. All right. We want to make everything as consensus democracy as much as possible in the economy, all right?
Yeah.
But if that's not an option right there, we could do with a voluntary majoritarian democracy for certain things. Keyword, it's voluntary. So if they join that commune, they know what they're getting into for how they're going to run that democracy. It's not like it's forced upon how our representative democracy is here in America, where it's
fucking shit show.
You have no say. Yeah, yeah. So you're assigned. It's basically like in the business, where your board of directors were like, okay, if we hit when you join this board, if the board hits 70% on decision, that means we're going to go through with what so and so, and your rights aren't being violated, your property rights aren't being violated because you agreed to that style of democracy. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right. But preferably a consensus, like, Well, that'd be preferable, but for the sake of brevity, we could, for certain situations, we could use that. That being said, though, from there, I was thinking is that, so if we have, okay, so like one of the things I was saying with when the communists producing, the communists participating into the marketplace, what makes sense to me is that they have a bank, a central bank, they you know, stockpile majority of the profits in. And what they do is that they outsource certain things to basically businesses to take care of them, so they don't have to have to worry about it.
Oh,
it just makes it gets rid of the headache, basically, of having to you know, have a meeting or like for, you know, just mundane shit that they don't want to, you know, take care of. Like, it just, all right, this business is, we like your service, we're going to go with you guys. If we don't like it, we're not going, you know, we're not going to continue your contract with that, basically.
Right.
So it'll make things run more efficiently. Because what Zach Isaac was talking about is that like the only way I could see it, like, I don't know, it basically the average person would be down for this. For like communism is that there is the state running the background, taking care of all these, you know, all this, you know, essential utilities and all that stuff. Where like, okay, well, I don't like that because it's fucking authoritarian. Let's see if we can use like implement some sort of market to take care of that stuff for us, so we don't have to, you know, somebody who's inexperienced in electrical, you know, engineering, they don't have to, you know, have a 3-hour debate on how we're going to have our electrical grid system working in our town, basically. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, what are you guys' thoughts about that?
I like it. I like the idea of it.
Yeah, and so, yeah, so, I mean, it's it takes care of that, and so I'm gonna go a little bit over the mutual aid part, and now I'm done with my whole little spiel with we're done with the synergism and economics. I also want to say for the rest of the show, so with the mutual aid, so, and like I said, it's going to depend on the situation, honestly, whether it makes sense to go through a mutual aid, use a mutual aid based interaction or market based interaction, how they interact. But basically how they would interact with each other and mutual aid, these two societies using a mutual aid economic system is basically, let's say if the commune needed some tractors, all right, to, you know,
farm or whatever.
But they, for whatever reason, they don't have the means production to do so.
Right. All right.
Or they don't have like, or they even have the capital to obtain it through a market economy. But what they do is they go talk to the consumer union, all right, that they have a good relationship with, and who's just like, hey, can we borrow so and so much money to you know, buy tractors, and then we'll give it to them. And we're, I think a good way to make sure nobody gets exploited from this is that there's basically a tally, and there's just like to see how, you know, keep track of how much is borrowed and lent to people, and it basically gives you like a reciprocity score. And higher people, the more higher your reciprocity score is, more people are going to want to interact with you using that, you know, that mutual aid network.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Kind of similar to the thing that Castro set up in Cuba.
What exactly is that? I actually am not familiar with that.
It was a social credit program. It's kind of similar to how China works. Except, of course, both of them were authoritarian, so it was more like, trust the government, be a good citizen, don't do crime, and it's essentially, hey, if you're a good boy, you get dinner, essentially, like, something like that.
damn.
But it has the idea of if you're, you know, if you contribute to society, you're good.
And that's the whole worker-starve thing, you know. I mean, like, at some point, there's a little bit of leeway there for those who can't work. But if you can, I mean, it's sort of discredited if you don't provide anything for others in any market sense. And
you got to put some effort in trying to, you know, be productive.
Yeah, there needs to be I mean, that's a true sense, you know.
I mean, I'm one of those people that thinks that if someone could work, if someone's able to, they should be. I'm not saying that everyone should have a job. I'm definitely saying that some people don't deserve to have jobs. I believe that retirement age should be at 50 years old because, Jesus Christ, I do not like working with you people anymore.
Right.
I work with a lot of old people. I do not like it, trust me. Old people working minimum wage jobs should just be allowed to retire and live off of whatever the fuck they want to live off of. But essentially, it's a good idea to, you know, have a society where if you could and wanted to, you can. And if you can't, you don't have to. You have stuff provided for you. It's one of the more appealing parts of leftist economics.
So one thing, though, is that, like, I wanted to mention, too, was with this, is that it also, since they're going to be competing in the market, the bonus is that they will still have the that psychological how should I put it? That pressure to be more to be more creative, basically.
Yeah.
So to be more productive. Not saying that, like, they in a traditional anarcho communist setup, they couldn't do that. But that just that extra pressure, though, would, you know, to be more creative with their, you know, what they make and, you know,
right, have like a free market competition kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's going to improve the society. I mean, I only see that as a plus. I mean, and the thing is they don't have to worry about being nobody's going to, in that society's going to have to worry about, basically being exploited by any business owners, because they are the business owners. So I mean, you're being able to have your cake and eat it too. That's how I see it. You get your needs taken care of, and you're also going to be able to, you know, have
it provide. It's a mutual, it's a mutual exchange where you provide your work, and in return, you get all your needs back. You know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about with like having been able to participate in the market simultaneously, using those your means of production, where you get the benefits of having a market society while also having your needs being taken care of at the same time. Basically that, and I think that's really cool how you could basically do that with that. I mean, I wish there was, like, more ANCOMs who are willing to think outside of the box, like, come to that conclusion. I mean, I've met some of them.
Same. Yes.
And it's like, it's just like, why not use the best of both economies to maximize human well-being?
Yeah.
Like, why haven't you thought about this? Anybody thought about this? And yeah, so like say like for after that though, for the commune, basically after the contractors, they have like a really fucking good harvest, and it's way more fruit than you fucking need. Basically, to give the excess fruit to the consumer unit, the consumer distributes towards, you know, all their subscribers and such. And yeah, everybody gets free food, basically. Well, not necessarily free, because you may have to work for it. But, you know, you didn't have to necessarily work for it, though.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, it's, I don't understand why people, like, You get too caught up with the semantics of, like, the demons of capitalism.
Oh, yeah, it's like, oh, well, that's not capitalism, though, because it's socialism, because da-da-da-da-da. It's like, okay, do we care more about the label, or do we care about what the label is supposed to represent?
Yeah. And I just see this, like, this bullshit, like, come on. Like, I honestly kind of stepped away for a little bit. I just been focusing on my financial situation lately. I just didn't want to deal with any of these, like, shit online.
I hear you.
And I'm going to get back into this soon because I have I have a lot more control of my time right now because I'm not working on a shit little hours a week over at that cannery anymore. Uh-huh. That being said, though, I just want these motherfuckers to get over their fucking bullshit and start getting some shit fucking done.
Yeah, I know. Let's work together already, alright? You know, let's just work together already, you know?
Yeah. Oh, you said something about you wanted to come, me to come on for another show. Did you say something about that?
Yeah, if you want to. I mean, it wouldn't hurt to have a third voice every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of want to talk about, like, you know, my idea I had for synthesizing agorism with syndicalism. I want to talk about that.
Okay.
All right. I'm down.
Yeah, because I think that those practices, because I did make that meme a while back. I there's a lot of potential for that practice to fuck shit up majorly.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We'd have to do it on another episode, though, because we have, like, maybe 20 minutes left on this one before we run out of recording.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, man.
Yeah, you're good.
It's good. Yeah. It's just 11:30 at night our time, and I got shit that I got to do in the morning.
So. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I'm going to let you guys have the rest of the show, though. All
right. Yep. Thanks for calling, Matt.
Yeah, thanks.
I want to still listen, though.
Oh, okay. He's going to get a front receipt of us signing off.
Yeah, we're basically just going to sign off because I got to go.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, man.
No, you're good. Hey, you got your point across. That was essentially one of the reasons I had this episode tonight, so.
Okay, yeah.
So, anyway.
Okay. Do you guys ending it right now, then, basically?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll see you guys then.
Okay. Yep. Just mention your page again so people know where to find it.
Okay. And when you post it, or?
We'll tag your page.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, cool.
All right. Thanks for showing up.
See you guys.
Yep.
Yep. See ya.
All
right.
See ya. Bye.
All right. You can follow Matt at Anarcho Synergy Ball. We'll post it in the comments or tag the page in our post.
And we're going to try to see if we can do... We're going to try to see, first off, if we can get it up as fast as we can, hopefully within the week. Second is if we're going to try to maybe do some editing for both the current events in this video, just to try to give more scenery. If Dave wants to do that, I think, because didn't you say you're going to do the editing?
Am I doing the editing on this episode?
If you want to, I don't have the fucking software to do it. I mean, I could download it, but I'd have to have the time to do it, and I don't know if I'll be able to, because... I don't know what Selena has planned for me.
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
So, anyway. So, that was our episode on free trade economics.
Along with some other shit tied in there.
Yep, along with some other shit. Just random useless information knowledge. Gold standard economy and stuff. We will probably have an episode next month. I don't think there's anything in my way
standing. I'm pretty sure I'll be available.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so we'll see you after the circus ends with the election.
Right.
And, if we're still alive and still have a government.
I mean, who knows? It might all just fucking end. Because Trump would be like, I'm staying here, even though Biden won. All right, well then.
And then you're just going to have me, this you're just going to have 10 seconds, and that's just going to be the episode of us screaming, it's Bogdan!
A bunch of armed... Oh, we're all going to be marching towards the Capitol, and we're going to be laughing in armed leftist.
Yes.
I love that Facebook group. Laughs and Armed Leftist.
Oh, man, it's very problematic, though. They found out that they're one of the guys that runs it is... Oof, he has big fed vibes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like severe tanky vibes, or
no? Like severe. Don't trust this guy with any intimate personal information. They will track you.
Oh, jeez.
Like this guy is a possible fed.
All right.
Anyway, that's our episode for this month, and we'll catch you next time out.